Did you know you can save up to 70% on the best brands just by shopping at FromRebel.com? We're talking about strollers, car seats, high chairs, espresso machines, cookware, everything you need for way less. Here's how it works. Every single day, Rebel drops thousands of new products on the site for up to 70% off. It is a constant stream of endless deals from top brands like Abba Baby, Nuna, Baby Bjorn, Breville, Nespresso, KitchenAid, Le Creuset, and more. But you have to act fast because every deal is one of a kind. So if you see something you love, make sure you add to cart fast. So stop paying full price when you don't have to. Whether it's baby gear, kitchen upgrades, or a treasure for your home you didn't know you needed, Rebel has it for way less, up to 70% less. Shop from Rebel.com and save big.
Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors, a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin.
Oh, yes, indeed. And, welcome to my Zoom hole, if you'll pardon that particular expression. And it's not just the Zoom hole, it's the clearing. This is the Your Life and Times with me, Chris Grimes, and I'm delighted to welcome to The Good Listening To Clearing. We are an illustrious company indeed. I give you Pete Bailey from Vox Coaching. We call each other, he calls me Lord Grimes and I call him Lord Bailey or Lord Pete. So here he is. Welcome, Pete Bailey.
Very good to see you. Hello, Chris. Hello, good morning.
Very good to see you too. And you're enigmatically leaning very close to your screen.
Oh, well, I was fascinated to listen to you.
No, and I wasn't telling you to back off. So you run Vox Coaching. We have that in common. You are the director of Vox Coaching. Mm-hmm. I am an associate of yours and delighted to be in that space with you. And I have to say, I've learned quite a lot from you over the years. We've known each other for many, many years. I know you're an acting teacher, you're a professional actor by training and background, and Vox Coaching is all about how to encourage people to communicate so that others want to listen. And it's a very, very impressive specializing in the university sector and others, I appreciate, in how you generally ply your awesome craft.
And I think we met at University of Bristol, didn't we, when I was running some kind of lifelong learning programs there, and you put in a bid to run a course which met with disapproval from the university because it was regarded as too juvenile to run, I think, as it mentioned, you know, pant-wettingly funny, I think. And so I had a hard time convincing the vice chancellor that we should run your course. But
and then we got through the vice chancellor, and then the comedy improvisation masterclass from Instant Whip was born.
Was born, yeah.
Indeed, lots of pants were indeed damp after we'd finished. So we knew best, and the Lord Chancellor didn't. So yes, so of course that was the comedy improvisational context, quite right. And that's many, many, you know, thousands of years ago in the darkness of time. Lovely. Yeah. So welcome to The Clearing. I'm going to bounce you along the wonderful storytelling metaphors of The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to get told. And then it's all to play for, Pete Bailey, because we've got the tree, which we shake to see which storytelling apples fall out. We've got alchemy, gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. It is absolutely all to play for. So, first question for you, which you may not have been expecting, which is, how's morale and what's your story of the day, Pete Bailey?
How's morale? Well, I guess I check in on my morale. A friend of mine gave me a good checklist. Your power, achievement, and affiliation are the things that motivate you. And so just sometimes I find it useful to kind of check in on those to see which of those is missing. And I guess affiliation has been the main one, because I love being with people, and I practice Aikido, and I had the first class of Aikido in person for like a year and a half. And I just noticed what we've been missing in terms of affiliation, contact with people, but actually also just physical proximity and contact. So I'm really glad to, I've been, out to a few campsites, and it's been very good to actually kind of get back in contact with human beings, I think. So that's been the main morale booster.
And I've heard psychologists couch it of the fact we've been starved of what are called third place encounters, which links to your affiliation. One and two are sort of work and family, which have become very, intermeshed and a bit boundaryless in some regards, if you're not careful. Yeah. And then the third place encounters are those chance, spontaneous encounters that rescue us from the mundanity of the rest of our lives.
Yeah, and they could be quite mundane, actually, but they're kind of quite handy. And also, there's a strange thing, I don't know if you've noticed, being on Zoom a lot, our kind of, our presence in the actual room we're in tends to be kind of quite reduced and restricted.
Yes.
Whereas if we're actually physically with people, our presence is alive in a way. And so I think I've noticed just over months, I've noticed a lot of people just, the background energy has...
Yes, absolutely.
Has just really sagged, basically. So those are the things I'm kind of reigniting. I guess.
And me too. And in fact, taming the beast of my Zoom hole has been a really interesting path, actually, because we are so used to being live in a room with our acting background and methodology of how we like to help people increase their confidence, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it's been a very interesting adaptive curve, I think, in terms of learning new stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And nothing much has happened to me today apart from this cup of tea, really, which yes, I kind of drink probably... I don't know, 15 cups a day. So I'm a real, what's his name? Tony Benn was apparently a teetotaler. He used to drink a pint of tea an hour.
Good heavens to Betty Boothroyd.
I think it did his kidneys in the end, but he and I are kind of pretty well matched.
Good. Yes, because you are teetotal too, are you not?
Yeah.
In good company.
Yeah.
But not tea total. See what you're doing there. 8 pints of that monkey a day.
Yes. So, yeah.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
By the way, you did mention there, I'm very supremely aware of your physical prowess in that you don't just practice Aikido. When I last spoke to you, you were a seventh Dan in Aikido.
I'm sixth Dan, actually.
Sixth.
But yes. Yeah. But I do teach Aikido. It's a kind of, it's quite like Tai Chi or Qigong, really, in that it's really looking at coordinating your mind and body, getting mind and body working together. So it's kind of, I guess it's quite close to what we're talking about today, which is the clearing and the sense of being in flow and being present. And when you're, I guess when you're the circumstances that set up your creativity. Really.
Yes.
And I guess, without getting ahead of ourselves, that's one of the Aikido mat is a really interesting container. It's literally a physical mat you go on, but you bow when you go onto it. There's various etiquette because it's a Japanese art. There's quite a lot of etiquette around it, and that creates a little container in which you have kind of conventions of practice together. And it's like it's an experimental area where you can study things. And so I guess that's kind of one of my clearings, really, is an Aikido mat, because it's this sense of a contained space in which you can clear out a lot of unwanted things and focus and pay attention, really.
And there's a lovely resonance there in my own sense of a clearing, which is a comedy improvisational theatre in the round type space. So I know that we'll get onto this, but the Aikido mat, I take it, isn't necessarily round, is it? Or maybe it is.
No, it's often rectangular. Yeah. And but it's got, for example, a sign and perhaps a couple of photographs and sometimes some flowers. And part of that container is the way you dress as well. Yes. And the way that you might bow to each other to begin and end a practice. So it's set in time as well as physical space, I guess.
Yes. So we'll get onto this as well, but physical presence and vocal presence is what you're absolutely all about. And I know that Aikido informs that really deliciously in how I know that you work so beautifully. Can you just recap those three motivational checklists you said?
Yeah, they're power. So that doesn't necessarily mean being in charge of, being emperor of the universe. But maybe you've at work, you've got control over a budget, or you get to decide things. The sense of achievement, after a bit of struggle, have you got something that you're proud of? And affiliation, which I guess is the ability to work with or learn from or collaborate with, be around people that we like and that people we admire or people we learn from. A quick kind of back of a fag packet or back of a vape packet, I suppose now. one of those, you can do a little analysis under those headings, just as a really simple way of thinking, okay, what's kind of missing from my
it links,
why rather, might I be demotivated at present?
Yes, links rather beautifully to purpose and the one's raison d'etre, one's energy level, where one places oneself. And also it made me think of the word reciprocity in terms of the relationships around us. You'll get back, that sort of thing.
So
deliciously then, that brings us to a wonderful entry point to bring you into what you may have inferred already might be your clearing. But as we've said, I'm going to take you through the normal storytelling metaphors of your life and times here in the clearing with Pete Bailey. So let's get there. What is a clearing like for you? Where do you go?
I had a lot of associations with this and thoughts. And I looked up, I don't know if you know, there's a play called The Clearing by Helen Edmondson. I think it's early 90s, probably. And like most writers, she thinks about her words and particularly about the title. And it's set in the amazing interregnum when we were between Charles's. It does seem extraordinary that they chose to name a future King of Britain Charles after the last two. But, but it's about Cromwell's invasion of Ireland, really. So it's not a barrel of laughs,
Did you say interregnum? There's a beautiful word in there.
Between regnum, the regents, the kings, yes, basically. So after the Civil War, and Cromwell's in power, and he went off to Ireland, really to, because a lot of funding had come from Irish landowners, to suppress the Irish, essentially. And so the play's about a relationship between an Irish woman and an English soldier, essentially. But I guess it's kind of a noun and a verb, both. There's a garden where you cleared things and manicured them in quite contained, controlled way. But what you're clearing out.
Yes. And did you were your synapses immediately fired up because you knew the book, or was this part of your
preparation? Yeah, a little bit. I mean, also just to get a sense of, also the sense of use of words, because I mean, I guess it was at the time of, the Yugoslavian Civil War, really, where ethnic cleansing was taking place. And that idea of clearing and what are you clearing out of the way to make space for? And, the multiple meanings of those words, essentially. And so I got thinking about, what am I clearing out of the way, as well as what is the kind of space that I'm in.
Lovely.
And I guess I meditate quite a bit. And that is, again, it's like a kind of experimental contained space where you can, I guess, for me, meditation is really about, it creates an environment where you can listen to what's going on, essentially. and you can spend a lot of effort trying to clear your thoughts out of the way and end up having a real old battle. Whereas I think at its best, you kind of notice the nature of your attention, and you notice the nature of, you kind of actually are listening to what's arising, really, whether that's feelings or thoughts or whatever.
So, and historically, I know if if I can't find you for a bit, it's because you've gone off on a silent retreat. You're not literally going AWOL, but you do like to go on silent meditative retreats.
Yeah, which sound, I mean, I do am quite into austerity once in a while, but they're kind of, so there's, yes, it's a mixture of the austere and the very pleasurable, actually, because although you're kind of eating vegetarian soup and completely silent and not making eye contact and sitting, you know, for a week without saying anything, that has a kind of pleasure to it, because it's a space and a time entirely for you.
Yes.
Without the demands and distractions elsewhere. So although it's quite kind of discipline, nevertheless, it is also a kind of, it's working, but also it's very spacious.
There's lovely food for thought there, in quite a sort of multi-textured notion of a clearing in your interpretation of it. So to get you to be specific now, I'm going to arrive a bit Waiting for Godot-esque with a tree in your clearing. So where would you like it to be, either physically or metaphorically?
I guess the other thing is a rehearsal room is the most, you know, is the most, the kind of place where, which has a lot of those features, essentially. I think that's a kind of, partly because there's also other people there to bounce off. And there's a few principles of rehearsal, really, because I think that's probably one of the main things you and I do when we're coaching people is we're just rehearsing them, essentially. And that I guess it's that you're actually physically doing things. You're doing things out loud. You're just focusing on one thing at a time. You're doing it for a limited time. It's contained in space. And you've got permission to fail. So you do things differently all the time and in kind of low risk. So I'd suppose those kind of principles of rehearsal, if you like, that would be my clearing. That would be my rehearsal room.
So there's a lovely through line or golden thread of being betwixt things. Rehearsing is preparing for something specific.
Yeah.
Stepping onto the mat of Aikido is about exploring physicality, defense. I know it's a very peaceful martial art in its intention. You'll be able to tell us much more about that. Maybe you don't.
Yeah. In fact, it's probably not even martial. It's probably not even a fighting art, I think. It's very, very defensive and emphasizes actually a calmness of mind, really, I think, is, you know, which is quite tricky to achieve, of course, but is the thing that if you can remain relatively calm under pressure, then you've got resources to deal with things.
Another word that's just fired off in my head is tranquility as well. So there's something tranquil about where you're describing. And I love the fact it's not absolutely, absolutely specifically in one place. It's between things, which I really like.
Yeah. And so the tree is shaken and lots of stuff has fallen out. Is that the...
Well, the idea is I arrive with a tree and then the metaphor is that I'm going to shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out, as in, how do you like them apples? Yeah. And this is where the construct of the second bit of your preparation was the 5-4-3-2-1 exercise, where you're about to go on the open road, lovely Pete Bailey, to talk about four things that have shaped you, three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention, borrowed from the film Up, that's a bit, squirrels, you know, what never fails to grab your attention, whatever else is going on for you. So for me, it might be a ping pong table. I can never resist a good old ping pong. Mm-hmm. And then one quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know until you tell us is what the tree is all about. So we're up in your canopy now to shake as you see fit.
Yeah. And, well, things that Things that shaped me. I think being I did a school play when I was probably 17 or 18, and I remember the moment of stark fear and terror about to, I mean, I have been in plays before, but about to step onto the stage, absolutely terrified. And that, it was kind of like a real imprint. And that, I think, really, I was so present and thinking, well, I've got to step forward. I've got to step onto the stage. And that, I don't know whether most actors have had this, but that moment of real terror, I think, was very formative for me.
By the way, that's deliciously informed your work, because I've learnt from you the notion of a offstage versus an onstage moment, that line you cross to step into the sunlight, to step across the line into performance space. So I love how that's anchored to your, you know, 14-year-old experience of terror, but that's where adrenaline is as well.
Yeah, yeah. And that, you know, just managing that, those feelings, the managing the, you know, the experience of being watched at, of being looked at anyway. And the, you know, the anxieties and self-consciousness that we have.
Well, I love the happy accent of that. What are you watching at?
Yeah, what are you watching at? And then other things, again, one of the first plays I was in at the old Soho Poly, which must have been, I don't know, 1980s or whatever. A great friend of mine, Alex Patterson, I saw him exercising before the play. And I thought, well, what are you doing? And he was warming up. And it hadn't occurred to me before that you might have a warm-up before a play. And so, and it was really, I think I was quite a graceless child. I was very in my head, and I wasn't at all in my body. I wasn't, you know, really sporty or physically adept. And that moment, it was a real revelation that actually kind of made me aware, physically aware, really. And so after that, I became, really very interested in looking at the way actors use their physicality and communicate with their bodies, as well as their voices, essentially. And I started working with someone called David Glass, who he called his company the David Glass New Mime Ensemble, which was a bit of a mouthful, even though the word mime, you know, brings most people out in hives. But he was someone that I basically had an apprenticeship with him in terms of learning how to act. He'd been a dancer and worked with Jacques Lecoq and various other theatre luminaries. And he used to have kind of like an 8-week rehearsal period where you would, you know, you would do like a dancer's do a class every day. And those things that really shaped my interest. And the things that I wanted to learn, things I was interested in. The people that inspired me, I guess, have often been teachers, really. Learning not only from David, but other Aikido teachers and other teachers. I think I've kind of sought out a lot of teachers along the way.
And so this put you on a path of incredible physical discipline as well, because to be an Aikido now 6th Dan is a very impressive application of one's physicality, because it's a, you know, an incredible passion and a discipline which takes immense commitment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, although we do go to the pub afterwards.
Lovely.
Yes.
Yes. Cut a pint of tea, please.
A pint of tea, yes. Or maybe a lime and soda or something, yeah. Most Aikidoists like a pint, and often, yeah, you know, most there's a good deal of conviviality to it, which is very important as well, I think, to have a...
And I wasn't implying austerity, by the way. I was just implying a sort of the discipline and the acumen of the physical application.
No, there is all that. And then there's also... because there's the space of the mat, but then there's also the space of the pub afterwards, where you can actually, rather than the very, as well as the very formal relationship on the mat, the kind of informal space to chat accessibly on, you know, in the pub, is those two clearings.
I love the riff on clearing. There are many airlocks of different ways of socializing, which are very
important. Yeah, because they, you know, I guess those different different social conventions and rules that that I guess actors are, you know, actors are replaying and showing.
Yes.
Writers are showing to people, basically. And things that grab my attention.
Have you hurried through all the things that, because you're going quite fast now?
Oh, yes, sorry.
So have we completed the things that have shaped you? And then we get on to things that
I think they probably, I mean, there's big things like growing up a Catholic. What else? I think that's probably most of the things without having an 8-hour podcast.
Yes. And with the Catholicism, and now you've gone towards the Aikido philosophy of the East. Have you
retained
your Catholicism in amongst all of that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was quite odd growing up as a Catholic in the kind of 70s, because there was a lot going on in Ireland, which, you know, and so, you know, and everyone at my school would be a Byrne or a Doyle or whatever. They'd be a second generation Irish, essentially, or third generation. I feel I've got a lot of affinity with people from Jewish backgrounds, because there was this kind of strange, slightly separateness that you had, there was a kind of slight separateness from the what kind of felt to be mainstream Englishness.
Yes.
Yeah, and
you've got interested in and intrigued by lots of different elements of experience. I'm hearing, because obviously it's a very rich tapestry of different things that grabbed your attention and then became very, very formative for you.
Yeah, and I think I guess I've kind of always followed my nose, really. I've always kind of done the thing that most interested me, when people leave university, they think, I better get a career, I better get this and that and the other. And when I left university, I had no idea whatsoever what I wanted to do. I kind of toppled into doing some plays, and then, you know, someone who was a professional actor said, oh, you could do this professionally, you know, and it just, I don't know how naive I was. It hadn't even occurred to me. I've basically been working as a gardener and, you know, just kind of, yeah. And so
following your nose towards the posy of, oh, that smells nice, I'll go over there. Squirrels.
And I think there was probably, there might have been a lot more liberty then to allowed ourselves permission to actually kind of follow your nose, and rather than feeling one had to follow a really strong career. And I'm very, very glad that I guess I took the opportunity to follow my instincts and
it sounds very purposeful. It's not like you were just rudderless and meandering around. No, there was a sense of following your nose towards something purposeful.
Something, stuff that interested me, really.
And you know the expression follow your bliss. It's not just sort of la 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 follow your bliss. It's got something quite pragmatic to it as well, is what I mean.
Yeah. So it's not necessarily comfortable, but it's following the stuff that that seems most demanding in some ways. Yeah. Yeah.
And although we're beautifully, I suppose, melding certain attributes of the storytelling metaphors together, so do you want to say anything specific about things that have inspired you beyond what you've said already?
Yeah, no, I think those, it's really been people, I think. What else do I love? I love comedy. I love listening to comedy, and particularly, I don't watch telly at all. My telly hasn't been on for 9 or 10 years, I think.
Did you know there was a pandemic going on?
I'd heard on the radio, on the wireless. but I watch, so I listen to particularly things like, do you know Fags, Mags and Bags?
Write that down, that's a second.
I highly recommend him. It's a kind of Glaswegian corner shop, basically. So that's my addiction. And
I love that. Fags, Mags and Bags.
Yes.
Fags, Mags, Bags.
Yeah. It's really, it creates a delightful little world. So particularly radio comedy, I think, inspires me.
And where do we find Fags, Mags and Bags? Is that a podcast or is that
I think, well, I think you'd find it on, you'd find it on BBC Sounds.
Ah, okay.
I would suggest. Yeah. I mean, that's the highlight, but I kind of...
Someday I hope I'll find myself there as well. Just kidding.
Yes.
But am I?
And Yeah, so those are my kind of inspirations, really. And the things that I guess I find I'm easily distracted. So in terms of things that grab my attention, I guess, you know, the meditation is really, a lot of it is looking about at the ways in which we pay attention and the types of concentration as well, so that there's a kind of maths exam kind of concentration that you're going, which is really not productive, but I think is the kind of quite tense or anxious concentration that we slip into. And whereas actually, if you can have a concentration where your awareness is, your awareness is sitting on something consistently.
Yes.
And is focused not in a narrow way, but is actually, that quality of focus, which I think phones and all the email demands that have, it's just a constant bombardment. I mean, it's a big cliche, isn't it? But that is a real enemy, I think, of our attention.
And presence. Yeah, monsters of distraction is how I've heard that couch, just constant monsters of distraction, which suck us into a vortex.
And so I think I noticed myself during the working day really trying to manage my attention, my distraction in that way. Good things that would grab me, I guess, if a new curry house has opened in Bristol, I'll be there.
Oh, allow me to accompany you.
Yes. Yeah, well, I think I've probably done a review of virtually every curry house in Bristol.
Yes, I like in Southwark, we go to Ali's Tikka Grill, and that's lovely.
Well, I haven't been there, actually. Nice. Yeah, well, I should. Well, that's a date.
I'm not, just to be clear, I'm not sponsored by Ali's Tikka Grill.
No, but you should go. Perhaps I'll give you a free meal next time. I guess also things that grab my, if I'm coaching someone or if I'm running a course, when someone describes their experience, I think in that they're, when they kind of really get into thinking and describing their experience, when they're investigating it, that is when I guess my antennae switch on, which is a bit different from someone, because you're talking about kind of telling stories. There's a kind of, I guess I like the analogy of the map and the territory, really, in that we've got the actual territory of our feelings and our experience in this way. And then we've got our stories, our map that kind of describes what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think that map, although stories are very compelling, they can be really deceptive, and we can kind of get wrapped up in the stories, thinking that they're the actual territory. And so I guess those moments,
there's a lovely resonance there in that being another clearing of itself. When you're coaching someone and helping them work out their map and their methodology, you're helping them find their own clearing so they can work this stuff out.
Yeah, that's it. And I guess it's those moments, particularly when you notice someone, you notice that not necessarily something's clicked with them, but you notice that they're actually investigating what they're thinking about rather than just trotting out the way that they usually describe their experience.
Yeah, they're getting inquisitive with their own experience rather than just broadcasting and sort of just broadcasting it. They're feeling it and sensing it.
And they, so there's that kind of, so that's, I guess that's a kind of clearing of their own where they're kind of actually, they're actually looking at things really.
And can I just find out one quirky or unusual fact about you before we move away from the tree? So I'm just going to shake the final apple out. What's a quirky or unusual fact about you, Pete Bailey, we couldn't possibly know until you tell us at this moment?
Well, I think in my secret youth, I played chess for Surrey Juniors, I wasn't a great chess player, but that's what I did. And I think it's probably, in terms of things that have shaped me, that's probably another thing that has shaped me, because it really, for quite a few years, I would sit with a chess board and go to chess competitions and play a lot of chess. And it's a very, it's a very particular way of thinking. And, it's quite competitive, very, Yeah, very.
I love the fact that a chessboard of it. I'm just loving the riff on the clearing. Chessboard is another clearing, and I'm the Bailey Gambit, like the Queen's Gambit. The Queen's Gambit is one of the best series I saw of the book over the pandemic period, actually, on Netflix.
Yeah, and it wasn't. And that was probably the heyday of my chess playing career. It was probably about that time, and the gender balance in chess is not an even one. And it struck me when I was kind of 12 or 13. I wasn't going to meet any girls playing chess.
Lots of bishops and rooks.
Yeah, and all the men there were perhaps, not very well dressed and slightly in their own world. And so, although it fascinated me, I gave up. You know, when I hit adolescence, I gave up. But that was, I still enjoy doing puzzles and stuff. Yeah. Actually, is another type of clearing to actually be able to switch off from having to do anything meaningful.
Yes,
it's good to get your brain engaged in a puzzle, but without kind of having to work. But
I love backgammon because it's not as complicated as chess.
Yeah.
And I love tennis for the same sense of arm's length, twonking something that's very, very involved in getting good at it, better at it, and ping pong similarly. But it's not cerebral. It's arm with my hands.
Yeah. Backgammon is a brilliant game, isn't it? Because it's like chess. The problem with chess is that if there's a difference in standard, it really shows. Yeah. With backgammon, anyone can have a
throw with the dice, dear.
There's a bit of a throw of the dice. And it's kind of also it kind of goes well with mint tea and coffee and conversation and
It's my job to curate the conversation, as you know, and get a lick on. You've been wonderfully helping me pace it beautifully. Now we're going to move away from the tree now and talk about alchemy and gold.
Yeah.
So when you're at purpose and in flow, Pete Bailey, what is it you most like revealing to the world? I also call this the diamonds beneath your feet. So how do you interpret that? Yeah.
Well, I found the idea of alchemy really interesting to think of what that, and I love the play The Alchemist. I mean, I'm a great fan of, which was written during plague, of course, well, set during the plague, basically.
Is that Ben Jonson or Marlowe?
It's Ben Jonson. I kind of think he's much underrated, really. And he's quite, because he's very contemporary, he's using often the language of the time. Shakespeare is a bit more rounded, a bit more romantic, whereas he's a bit dirtier and he's dealing with the con men and the prostitutes and the underworld of Jacobean, Elizabethan England, basically. Yeah, and that's...
Well, I love Volpone similarly for different reasons, because the first line of, good morning to the day, next my gold.
Next my gold.
Alchemy as well.
Yeah.
I've got to manage this within about 3 or 4 minutes. It's all going really well, and that's my job, not yours. So alchemy, gold.
Yeah, so I'd say, the kind of transformation that happens... In terms of, if you're looking at meditation, if you're looking at getting in touch with your feeling in meditation, very often I find if I can be with my feeling in meditation, then things change, they transform, rather than try and kind of working out a lot of stories mentally, if you like. So that, I guess, is the kind of alchemy that I would... That's my association with alchemy.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So you go to the quiet to find the alchemy.
I think that would be, that's the change. So following the metaphor, if you like, I guess it's the fact of having the space of the clearing itself, if you like, and not thinking of producing particularly
things. Being and being
so that, things can arise and things can, the unexpected can arise, essentially.
Your emergent thinking, yeah.
Yeah, so rather than actually working, I think, you know, there's a real place for targeted or structured productivity and attention. But I guess it's also being able to create space where you're not, you don't have a deadline, you don't have a structure particularly. And actually it's the unexpected things that arise, really. Lovely. Rather than the, yeah.
By the way, I've loved your reincorporation of the riffing on the clearing has become a really lovely, delicious, if I may, recurring theme through this conversation. We keep returning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The fact of twang back into the clearing. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yes, yeah, so that's, so I guess the things that I've, the key things that I've always followed my nose, really, I've followed my instinct. I was thinking about the, you know, the cake, the mottos, those kind of things. The things that I've heard from other people that I hold on to is Humphrey Littleton. I'm sorry, I haven't a clue. He said, never lose touch with silly, which I think is a great motto. And in Aikido, there's a motto that right is might, rather than might being right, rather than force being right. Actually, the sense of rightness or correctness is what gives you power. And I guess I've always been really interested in learning. And that's the thing that's driven me. And when I hit 50, I kind of made a resolution to myself to have an extraordinary decade. It might not be an easy decade, but to take the most extraordinary choice that I could in all circumstances, really. Take the most interesting choice when things arose.
Yes.
And that hasn't necessarily made things easy or straightforward, but it does mean that wherever you got a choice, you take the most interesting one, essentially, I think, is why.
And by the way, what you're doing really beautifully at the moment is the cake that I'm awarding you with, you're beginning to put the cherries on the cake already,
yes.
Which are, you know, the legacy of this conversation. And when all is said and done, this is the cheeky bit of Shakespeare inspired by all the world's a stage. How would you most like to be remembered, Pete Bailey?
Yes. Well, I mean, I think things like legacies are probably for prime ministers, really, rather than, and I think being honest, we probably won't be remembered very long. If we're honest about it, probably, you know, of course I remember people with affection, but once we're gone, we're kind of gone. And I think probably that's the joy of live performance, really, is that actually once you do it, it's there and then, and it's in the moment. And so I guess to allow things to disappear as well and not try and fix a legacy in that way.
I'm hearing, and this too shall pass. It will move on. The world will,
you know, and
the time will drift on.
Yeah, the joy of doing, because I never really, I didn't really do much film or TV or screen work as an actor. And stuff happening now in the moment on stage there and then once, I think was the, you know, that's when things are happening. And if we try and fix them and make them safe and nail them down, then they, you know, often that comes from a kind of anxiety, if you like.
I agree. Yeah. And resonates beautifully with that my love and joy of spontaneity in all things comedy improvisation as well. It's very immediate. It's now and it's gone.
As has our podcast, probably, I guess.
Yes, we're coming up to a lovely... So where can we find out more about the lovely Pete Bailey and Vox Coaching on the interweb, please?
Yeah, well, it's just to say I've got an unusual spelling of Bailey. So when you're naming your children, think carefully about the spelling of things, because I guess there's a whole lot of people who every single day they spell their name out to people. So my it's Bailie, and the only place, I'm not really on social media or any of that stuff apart from LinkedIn, but Vox Coaching is where I am. That's where I work. And that's where to find me. So
come and it's say a joy hi. To discover you and rediscover you there. And I look forward to continuing to work with you, working with you in throughout the history of time until the sand blows us all away and no one will remember anything. Marvellous. Lovely. So, Pete Bailey, thank you so much. Is there anything else you'd like to say as this is your moment in the sunshine here in your Life and Times with me, Chris Grimes?
It's just been a pleasure to see you, as always. Enjoy emerging from the pandemic, I guess.
You too, which will be another clearing which has changed from the one before. Yes, yes. Love that. So you've been listening to Your Life and Times with me, Chris Grimes. This has been the lovely Pete Bailey from Vox Coaching, a wise, enigmatic and impressive human being indeed. So thanks, Pete. You've been an absolute joy and I will see you soon for a curry, please.
Cheers. See you then.
You meant at least Tikka Grill give me a free curry, not you, but maybe.
Yes.
I'll just try and get you to say on the podcast, I'm buying the curry,
Chris. I will buy you a curry, Chris. Thank you.
I'm an actor, dear. I like a free meal. So thank you very much indeed. Join us next week for more stories in the Good Listening To clearing. Thank you very much indeed. And good night. Oh, hey, easy tiger. He's left himself with about a minute and a half to do some nice little filling. Bless you. That was Pete Bailey from Vox Coaching. I obviously continue to be Chris Grimes and you continue to be you. Obs, obs, obs. Just to remind you, if you want to get involved in the show or gift it to someone, the opportunity to be in something called Legacy Life Reflections, that's a particular series strand that I've got whereby we can use the storytelling construct of the podcast and show in order to go a little bit deeper into legacy and how you'd most like to be remembered. Remember, of course, inspired by Shakespeare's All the World's a Stage and All the Men and Women Merely Players. So there might be someone in your family or close to you that you'd like to record their life story for posterity. You can get in touch with me, care of Chris, at secondcurve.uk. And by the way, that's my coaching and facilitation company at Second Curve, which is why I'm giving you that. Or you can even send an email to chris@chrisgrimes.uk. So thank you once again for listening. It's my great pleasure to have you here in the clearing where all good stories come to get told off the back of all good questions getting asked in the first place. Thank you very much indeed and see you next time. To your good health. You've been listening to the Good Listening To show with me, Chris Grimes. If you'd like to be in the show too, or indeed gift an episode to capture the story of someone else with me as your host, then you can find out how care of the series strands at the goodlisteningtoshow.com website. And one of these series strands is called Brand Strand Founder Stories, for business owners like you to be able to tell your company story, talk about your purpose and amplify your brand. Together we get into the who, the what, the how, the why you do what you do, and then crucially, we find out exactly where we can come and find you to work with you and to book your services. Tune in next week for more stories from the clearing, and don't forget to subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts.